Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Let's go out to the phone lines. 888-957-9570. And I'm interested in what people think on a baseball side in terms of, are we even going to know anything this season? What is this team going to look like, and what is success going to be measured by for Gabe Kapler? Let's go to Adam in Philadelphia.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
What's up, Adam?
Hey, thanks a lot for having me on. I appreciate it. So I'm calling because I was obviously listening to your program. I listen to sports radio all day in Philadelphia. I've lived there my whole life and drive for a living. So I get plenty tuned into what the fans are thinking over here. And as far as what everybody is actually, you know, compelled to call up and talk about Gabe over there, I think he's getting a bad rap. Unjustifiably so. I think that he's a much better manager than people gave him credit for. I'm sorry, do you guys have me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Oh, sorry, yeah. Basically, Philadelphia, I think, in a lot of ways, I mean, I love Philadelphia, lived here my whole life, big sports fan, great, passionate city, but in a lot of ways, we did earn our reputation. Around the sports scene,
and, yes.
You know, the whole booing Santa Claus, or whatever you want to, however far back you want to go.
The occasional thrown battery.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of people in this city that were just resistant to his personality and his tactics as it comes to managing players, in the sense that I think a lot of people in this city tend to be happy only when it rains, and if somebody's not getting yelled at or chewed out, then clearly they're not being disciplined or can't get better as a player. But as far as what was being said before about, I don't know who it was who was saying it, but saying that there was a mutiny in the locker room and he lost the players. As far as I know, that's not true. All I've ever heard come out in the media from the players are positives. And I think you're seeing that now in a lot of the reports with the, you know, unsolicited calls from players and front office members from the Phillies to say that Gabe did a good job. You guys know much about those reports?
Yeah, Philly.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Adam. Go ahead.
There's incentive for Philly to want him to get
hold
another
on.
Job.
But specifically on the mutiny thing, because I had the same reaction. I don't remember a mutiny, and I don't recall any players talking about a mutiny. So I'm curious where that came from.
Well, it was over his not disciplining Gene Segura when he did discipline somebody else. It was his lack of, I guess, consistent behavior in the clubhouse.
Okay.
And there was also some things with the McCutcheon injury. I'm not sure exactly what.
The McCutcheon injury was the Segura hustle play.
Yes.
That's the same issue. What happened essentially is, thanks in part to Gene Segura not running out a ground out,
there you go.
Andrew McCutcheon got caught in a rundown, tore up his knee, lost the rest of the season. Kapler was then criticized for not benching Segura immediately when he had failed to run out the grounder. And we actually have that audio. There was some audio where he had a debate with a Philly radio guy. And, you know, the way this it's funny because I heard this today. I believe it was on Bonte, Steiny, and Guru. That the way it had been talked about was, well, Kapler can't control himself, and he got in this screaming fight with a Philadelphia radio guy over Gene Segura. And then the audio was very clearly of a nutty Philly radio guy screaming at Gabe Kapler, and Gabe Kapler very calmly saying, listen, if I bench Gene there, I don't believe it helps Gene. I don't believe it helps the team. And I'm not concerned about what you think. I'm concerned about what's going on inside the locker room. So that's not to say he didn't screw that situation up. I honestly don't know if he did or not. I'm just saying I see the caller's point that some of the vitriol towards Gabe Kapler could totally be, well, Philly fans are a little crazy.
Well, they are crazy. Ray, if we were going to make the argument that it's going to work, okay, if it's going to work. Let's say we're making that argument. What are the points to that? Why is it going to work for Gabe Kapler the second time after he's failed once?
If Farhan Zaidi gets baseball players.
And if Kapler learns from his mistakes. I mean, that's the same answer for every second-time manager, right?
Yeah. It worked for A.J. Hinch. And I'm just using him as the last example.
Yeah. And of a guy who
managed a team that wasn't overloaded with talent, didn't do it very well, then got put in a situation where he managed a team with a lot of talent and did well, not just because of the talent, but because he learned how to utilize it better. So, yeah, that my answer is, tell me what Farhan Zaidi does with the roster.
What about the humility factor of getting fired? I think everybody in this room has been fired at one point in their life, and there's nothing worse than going home.
Nah, not me.
Family members and saying, "Honey, I lost my job. I'm sorry." And that's a humbling experience. You know, you're looking at your family, and they're looking back at you, and you feel like a miserable loser. And you kind of look in the mirror, and you say to yourself, "I got some changing I got to do." I think to me that would be the big. If I was selling this to the fan base, and if I was Gabe Kapler himself, I think that's what I'd be saying: is that I learned a lot from my own hubris, and I think this time around I'm going to do X, Y, and Z different. Right?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that's the hope for anyone getting a second opportunity after not doing great with a first opportunity at something. And obvious, look, again, that's the thing. As far as the baseball side of it goes, the only takeaway I really have today is clearly Farhan believes in what Gabe Kapler can do as a baseball manager. And speaking of that, we will be replaying some of the Farhan Zaidi Gabe Kapler presser coming up in about 20 minutes. We also have a name game right before that at 4:20 today. And for the name game, I have it right here. You're going to be able to win tickets to the Black Crowes 30th reunion concert, Shoreline Amphitheater, next fall. Very exciting stuff. Right now, though, a few more phone calls on Gabe Kapler. Let's start with Carlos in San Jose. What's up, Carlos? Carlos? It's all you, Carlos. And you're gone, Carlos. John in Vallejo.
Great point.
See, now I start to think it's us. John, are you there? Well, John, at least, John's phone is working. John's just not paying attention to the phone. Oh.
Maybe he's having to discipline one of his screaming children.
What's the first order of business for Farhan this offseason?
Texter says, Kolsky's more polarizing and sketchy than Gabe Kapler.
Order of business, Ray?
Don't know what the first is, because that's a chronological decision. It might be that the most important thing he does before training camp starts is the last. But I think most people would agree that it is either deciding what to do with Bumgarner or figuring out whether you want to stay with Belt or figure out how to move him.
What do you think they're going to do with Bumgarner? They extend him a qualifying offer or a extension?
They already did.
Oh, so that's official.
The qualifying offers to both Bumgarner and who was the other one, Albie?
Will Smith.
Will Smith. They're both extended. Neither of them has gotten back on it yet, but it's got to be done by tomorrow. So by tomorrow, at this time, we should know whether Bumgarner and Smith have accepted qualifying offers or not.
So, Matt, Ray, does Gabe Kapler affect Madison Bumgarner in any way?
No.
I don't see why he will. Well, I mean, let's put it this way. If he does, it'll be from Madison Bumgarner talking to him, don't you think? Does Madison Bumgarner strike you as the kind of guy who's making decisions based on, like, gossip or rumors?
I have no idea. I don't think he is, but you got to think he's got a buddy or two on the Phillies, whether it's McCutcheon, Aaron Nola, somebody, and you've probably read, like, because guys all text or they all know each other.
But even that's not going to have anything to do with the stuff we're talking about.
No.
It's going to have to do with what was Kapler actually like behind the scenes, stuff that we really don't know. I mean, as much as we can speculate some of the stuff about his baseball decisions, because at least we see a product of it on the field, we have no damn idea how he related to Aaron Nola. We just don't.
No, I agree with that.
So if Bum is friends with a member of that pitching staff, then I'm sure that would play into whether he has an opinion on the hire. But my instinct is Madison Bumgarner makes his own decisions and determinations on things more often than not. And if he cares at all, he'll talk to the guy, would be my guess.
Yeah, but guys gossip. You know, you always ask about how people are behind the scenes. What about
normal guys, but Bumgarner?
Yeah, everybody does, man. And right, what do you think they do with Posey? You think they sit down Posey, Farhan, and Kapler in the very near future and say, Posey, you can't be our cleanup hitter anymore. We love you to death. You're going to be our transition guy.
That's not how they're going to do that.
Then what are they going to do?
they're going to, I think they're going to let him start there and then see how it goes. And then if Zaidi thinks that that's an experiment that's run its course, he'll tell Kapler what he thinks, and Kapler will probably take him out of the spot.
One last phone call.
But it's not going to be a sit-down thing where this is what we're doing.
Okay.
One last phone call. Roberto in San Leandro on Gabe Kapler. What do you got?
Hi, it's Roberta.
Roberta. Well, someone should have told me that. But yeah. Go ahead, Roberta.
That's okay. I love you guys. You're great. So here's my quick thing. You know, and I don't want to be polarizing, but here's the thing. I felt very hopeful, kind of like how you guys were when Zaidi was hired, right? Then this happened. And all I have to say is, who's clamoring for Harvey Weinstein right now?
Well, but that's a very different, just to be clear, Roberta, and keep Roberta. Oh, too late. They cut Roberta. That was not my decision. But Roberta, Harvey Weinstein is not comparable to anybody in this situation. I mean, anybody, even the criminals in this situation are not comparable to Harvey Weinstein. But to be clear, Farhan Zaidi and Gabe Kapler, we're talking about negligence. We're talking about not being as responsible as they should have been. We're talking about serious mistakes, but we are not talking about assault crimes. Like, Gabe Kapler has not been accused of assaulting anyone or participated. Like, that's not. So I don't want to conflate him with Harvey Weinstein. That's not fair.
You're pointing at me, or you're pointing
I'm pointing at the studio, who were desperate to play a breaking news sound.
95.7 The Game, breaking news. Powered by Radio.com Sports and brought to you by Quip. Go to Quip.com/2019 and get your first refill pack for free.
It's not great news, but it's not a big surprise either. Joe Staley will be having surgery on his broken finger today. He will definitely be out this coming Sunday. No additional information as far as following Sundays, Albie? I'll take that as a no. So we don't know anything more, but I think we probably all expected Joe Staley to be out against the Cardinals. So that's what it is. Justin School is probably going to take his place. We got a name game coming up right after this. A chance to win Black Crowes tickets. First time they've played together in a long time. And also, we're sponsored by Ticket Crushers. Got a ticket, suspended license, DUI, don't pay. Let the attorneys at Ticket Crushers go to court for you and crush that ticket for as little as $149. Ticket Crushers knows how to win. Call 866-TICKET-HELP. That's 866-TICKET-HELP for a free consultation. Name game is next. 888-957-9570 is the phone number. Line up. We will take your yes or no questions. And if it's a yes, you get to keep guessing. If no, bye-bye, and if you get the name, you'll win Black Crowes tickets right after this on 95.7 The Game.
Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
Triple 8 9 5 7 9 5 70 is the phone number. We got Black Crowes tickets to give away, and we're playing a name game. It's going to be your choice. 30th anniversary reunion tour for the Black Crowes, September 8th at Concord Pavilion, or September 9th at Shoreline Amphitheater. You get to pick which show. Give us a ring right now. 888-957-9570 if you want to participate. As you know, yes or no questions. Trying to identify a person in sports with two first names. We have chosen that individual. You get to ask yes or no questions. We'll tell you if you're right, and if you get it right, you get to keep asking until you guess who it is. We'll do that in just a second. Quickly, a 650 texter recommends you do an investigation into my background. Word around Berkeley is I'm a very shady dude, and that's fair. I may be in just as bad position here. As a matter of fact, I'd rather you didn't do research into my background, because let's keep me safe, and let's play a name game.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for
The Name Game.
Starring anyone with two first names.
What's your name?
My name?
Third first. It's a funny name.
What'd you say his name was again?
His name is Ricky. Ricky Bobby.
Ricky Bobby? He's got two first names.
Now, here's your host with two first names, Damon Bruce.
You know what? I didn't consider that not having Damon here sort of removes the tie-in for the name game. The reason we're doing it in the first place. But hey, in honor of Damon Bruce, as he recovers from whatever sickness has him under the weather, we play the name game. Again, we're looking for a player with two first names. You get to ask a yes or no question. Let's start with Gerard in San Jose. What is your yes or no question?
Hey, good afternoon, guys. I'm just going to take a shot at it. Is it Anthony Davis?
No, it is not Anthony Davis. But I'll tell you what, it's a good start from Gerard in that that is, in fact, somebody with two first names. Sometimes the first guess is like John Smith. That doesn't even have two first names. So good job, Gerard. Wrong answer. Line opens up, and we move on to Eric in Lafayette. What's up, Eric?
Hey,
yes or no question?
Guys. First question, is it a football player?
It is not a football player, but thank you for participating, Eric. And with Eric dropping off, you can hop on 888-957-9570. Daryl in Sunnyvale, what is your first yes or no question?
Did this player play baseball?
This player did not play baseball. Thank you, Daryl. Ruled out a couple of sports now, and we move on to Curtis in Hayward. Curtis, what is your first yes or no question?
I would say basketball.
But you have to ask it in the form of a question, Curtis.
Pardon?
The question is, did he play basketball? Is that what you're saying, Curtis?
Yeah.
He does, in fact, play basketball. Now you get another question.
Is it? Oh, no.
Oh, no is right, Curtis. Curtis, quickly, you have 3 seconds to ask another question.
Would it be the Warriors?
He is not on the Warriors, Curtis. Thank you for trying. Charles in San Francisco.
Ray, this is your favorite segment, right?
Ray loves this segment.
I'm not paying attention. Go ahead.
Charles, what is your yes or no question?
Has he played for the Los Angeles Clippers?
He has not played for the Los Angeles Clippers. Took me a second just to rack my memory and make sure. Adam in San Francisco, we got a basketball player who has not played for the Clippers and is not a Warrior right now. What is your yes or no question?
Michael Jordan.
I'm sorry, what's that, Adam?
He had a guess.
Is it Michael Jordan?
It is not Michael Jordan, although he does, in fact, have two first names. Nathan in Richmond. We're having a good name game today. I told you this would be tough, Albie. Let's go, Nathan. What do you got?
Does he play for the Lakers?
He does play for the Lakers, Nathan.
Is it LeBron James?
It is not LeBron James. Daryl in Sunnyvale. What's your yes or no question, Daryl?
He gone.
We tried to give you the chance, Daryl. Jimmy G, wait a second. Jimmy? Well, we got to talk about Monday night, bro, but first, what's your yes or no question?
Hey, how's it going?
Good. What's your yes or no question, Jimmy?
Dwight Howard.
Jimmy, you're a winner.
Attaboy.
All right.
You recovered from the loss on Monday night. Good job, Jimmy G.
Yeah, Jimmy, Albie, when you have Jimmy and you're getting his address, first of all, write down that phone number so we can have him on as a guest in the future, and second of all, ask him what the heck happened on Monday.
Ray, are you happy for him?
And make sure you give him the option, Black Crows, September 8th or September 9th. Although I have to say, no shade to the show because I would like to go to that show. But who can decide between two dates a year from now? I don't know how I'd make that decision.
Any woman in my life ever. Remember that thing you promised we'd go to
eight
months ago from now?
That's a good point.
No, I don't remember.
That's good and fair. I never remember anything. All right, folks. Obviously, we've spent a lot of time today on the Gabe Kapler hire. We've looked at a few of the angles from it. We'd like to get more into the baseball side of it, and we will do that coming up in a little while. But right now, I think it's time we go directly to the source. And obviously, at the introductory press conference today, Farhan Zaidi and Gabe Kapler both addressed a number of things, probably nothing more than the situation with the Dodgers that has led a lot of people to question the hire. From a non-baseball standpoint, they also got a little bit into the baseball side and what about Kapler appealed to Farhan as a hire. And we're just going to play it for you starting right at the beginning with, I believe, Farhan Zaidi introducing Gabe Kapler.
It's been a really long process. It's been a long and thorough process. You know, we took the responsibility of choosing our next manager seriously, and we had a terrific pool of candidates. It was really an honor and privilege to get to know the different candidates that we interviewed. We did multiple rounds we had the candidates meet with a wide spectrum of people in the organization, not just baseball operations, but people on the business side, had some conversations with players and members of the staff, and really wanted to conduct this as a collaborative process. I want to thank all of the candidates that participated. There are a lot of guys that I think deserve the opportunity to manage one day, and I hope it happens soon for them. That was one thing that I felt really strongly about as we went through this. As I said at my end-of-season press conference, when we thought about what we really wanted in our next manager, I mentioned that we wanted to find somebody who could create strong relationships with players and with a front office. And we felt like if we had those two things, that would be the foundation for a really strong and positive relationship and somebody who could really take this organization forward. And as we went through the process and interviewed candidates, it became clear to us as a group that Gabe Kapler was the right guy for the job. And as part of that process, we reached out to people in the Phillies organization, and frankly, they reached out to us as well to offer their endorsement and support. That was one thing that was very clear to us, that in terms of developing those relationships with both the players and with the front office, that was something that Gabe did exceptionally well with the Phillies, and that was coming directly from the source. So that was a very pivotal and valuable piece of the puzzle for us as we went through this. I obviously have some experience with Gabe. We worked together in Los Angeles. He was the farm director there. I think that's the most difficult job in baseball. It's the most difficult job in baseball because organizations are increasingly putting a lot of emphasis on player development. It's an area where I think teams view the potential to create a competitive advantage and a sustainable winner. And in his role there, he not only did that, but created something that was sustainable even when he left. He hired staff and he put processes in place that I think are a big part of why that farm system operates as effectively and as productive for that organization as it is today. You know, we're in a situation, and we've talked about it a lot, where we're an organization in transition. And development is going to be a key for us. It's going to be a key for us not just at the minor league level, but at the major league level. And as we went through the process and thought about Gabe's candidacy and qualifications, we thought he was someone that, beyond building those relationships that I talked about, would also be able to focus on the development that we think we're going to need to be successful going forward. I want to touch on the incidents in L.A. that, you know, have been out there in the public sphere and talked about over the last couple of weeks. I was obviously there at the time, and I just want to state a couple of things for the record. And, you know, what we talk about here, you know, Gabe does have sort of supporting documentation for, and these are things that were corroborated by MLB's investigation, which was part of the process. You know, number one, Gabe never tried to hide anything. The incidents that happened, he reported up the chain of command within baseball operations. The baseball operations group referred him to legal counsel in L.A., and everything we did from that point forward was done collectively as an organization. Secondly, in those cases, I think it's important to note that, again, as an organization and, you know, in concert with legal counsel, we did approach the victims and ask about reporting these incidents to the police. And we respected the victims' wishes with whatever they decided to do in that case. But I just feel very strongly about stating that there was never an attempt to cover anything up. At the same time, for both Gabe and myself, we've used this process to reach out to advocates and people in the community that are experts in this field and try to understand from their perspective how they viewed those events. And I think we both come to realize that there were things we could have done better. And in that regard, I would point to a couple of things in particular. One is we did not seek their advice. I mean, people that we have spoken to over the last couple of weeks, we did not go to experts in this field and leaders in this field and ask them how we should handle those situations. I think we viewed it as situations where, as long as there was internal reporting, which there was, and as long as we followed legal advice, which we did, and offered, you know, the ability to go to the police and assist in that process, that was what we did. And in talking to members of the community, we've realized that that was an inadequate response. And what we've come to realize is not only should we have sought help from people who were experts in the field, but we should not have stopped with the notion of reporting these incidents to the police. I think what we've come to understand is this is not a situation where these incidents and what you do afterwards are just about protecting victims, but really about supporting. And I don't think we did enough in that regard. And I've had to reflect on that, and I'm truly sorry that I didn't do more. We all took the responsibility of choosing our next manager very seriously. And a big part of that is the character of the person. This is not a job that's just about the X's and O's. This is about somebody who's going to be an ambassador to the community, a leader of the organization. And based on my personal experience with Gabe, I feel very strongly he can be that kind of person and leader for us. I think that's what we as an organization collectively came to understand through this process. And I'll let him speak more to that. But he's somebody that I believe in, that we believe in, that we're really excited to get out in the community and have our fans and other people in the community who care about this organization get to know. Because when they get to know Gabe Kapler, I'm just very confident and excited that it's going to be the start of a tremendous partnership and that he's going to lead us into the future in a way that our fans and our organization can be really proud of.
Ann Killian, San Francisco Chronicle. Farhan, just to clarify, in the incidents back in 2015, were you on the email chains and part of the decision-making process with the Dodgers?
Okay. Yeah, I was aware of the incident as it happened and as Gabe reported up the chain.
Both incidents?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And when you were interviewed with the Giants, did those come up?
I don't believe they did, no.
Okay. As you know, the fan base is pretty fractured at this mm-hmm. point, has been disappointed for a number of reasons. And I'm just wondering about your decision-making. You had a number of candidates, as you said, they were all qualified, yet you decided to hire the guy who has been described as polarizing, a lightning rod, who comes with a lot of baggage. People deserve second chances, but this is a pretty, you know, one of the crown jewels of Major League Baseball, this job. I'm just curious about why you feel that this is a way to rebuild the connection with the fans.
Look, that's a great question, and I felt and we felt like it was our responsibility to select the person who was right for the job. And we've talked about some of the reasons why, what we were looking for, and why we felt like Gabe was the right person for that. So I think you're asking about a certain set of perception issues that were out there, and I think for us it was a question of whether we were going to judge someone based on some of those perception issues or what we knew to be true, and by our firsthand experience, by the interview process, by references that we checked. And ultimately, we decided that was what was important. And I think that was because we recognized the gravity of the job that we were going to be interviewing for and filling and how impactful this job can potentially be.
Hey, Farhan. Phil Barber, Santa Rosa Press, Democrat. You knew this hiring was likely to be controversial. You've discussed that to some extent already. Was there a greater vetting process for Gabe than there was for other candidates? If so, what generally was that, and did it affect the timeline of this hire?
Yeah, it did not affect the timeline because we were doing a lot of things in parallel, including interviewing GM candidates and hiring Scott. There was a greater vetting process because of some of the points that Ann raised and, like you said, some of what's been out there. As I mentioned, we talked a lot about the conversations we've had with people in the community. I don't want to get into more details about the identities of those people out of respect for their confidentiality, but they were valuable resources for us. And one of the things that came out of those conversations was that they're really not that interested in the he said, she said of what did happen or what didn't happen. And I felt like I needed to clear the record a little bit up here about some of what's been out there and some of what I believe, not just what I believe to be true, but what I know to be true and what was corroborated by MLB's investigation.
That is Farhan Zaidi talking about the hire of Gabe Kapler. And now we'll get some of Kapler himself, and obviously a lot of this addressing the controversy over how he handled a couple of incidents in Los Angeles, but also talking about his excitement to be part of the San Francisco Giants.
I think we all want to come to work to be inspired, and we all want to come to work to inspire other people. And as part of this vetting process that goes on in a managerial search, we're doing the same the other way. So I have the experience with Farhan. I know that what Farhan stands for, his character, the things that he thinks are important are also important to me. And those things are diversity and equality in the workplace. I leaned on my mom pretty heavily through this process, and for pretty obvious reasons. I think if I could go back and do some of the Dodgers stuff different, I probably would have called my mom and asked her a few more questions about which steps to take. And to Farhan's point, figuring out ways to support even better. And I think this is the right time to say that I'm sorry that I didn't make all the right moves. Everything that I did, I acted on from a place of goodness and from my heart and wanting to do the right thing. But I was naive. I was in over my skis and trying to do things on my own when it was very clear that I needed counsel, and I needed counsel from people like I've met in this community over the course of the last 2 weeks. And going forward, I would be seeking out that counsel. Again, want to just take a moment to acknowledge Farhan and Scott for the faith that they're demonstrating in me by giving me this jersey and this San Francisco Giants baseball cap that I'm very, very proud to be wearing right now. Also want to acknowledge Rob and Larry, who are also here today, and the entire Giants organization for putting that trust in me. I'm going to work tirelessly to reward that faith and this opportunity. Farhan mentioned it earlier today. I'm pretty humbled by the fact that there are only 30 of these jobs. And I'm getting a job very quickly after having some, you know, pretty public issues and some things in Philadelphia that didn't go according to plan, and I don't take that lightly. And through the course of this process, I've gotten to know a lot of great people in and outside of the organization that I know are going to be helpful in me learning from the mistakes that I made in Philadelphia and applying them here in San Francisco. The first that stands out to me is Bruce Bochy. And as I went through this process, I had the opportunity to spend a couple of hours with Boch, and it is going to be impossible for me to fill Bruce Bochy's shoes. It's not something that I'm going to set out to try to do. He's a Hall of Fame manager, beloved in this city and across baseball for so many totally appropriate reasons. One of the things that we talked about in our conversation was his second time managing was better than his first time, and he made a lot of adjustments along the way, and I can look for cues. One of the things that I'm going to set out to do is spend a lot of time with Boch and learning as much as I can about the things that he learned. And that's one of my major initiatives. Buster is another guy that I was able to get to know during this process. We spent some time together as well. And look, I found Buster to be very attentive, very aware. And as I think ahead of how I'm going to make an impact in this clubhouse, I'm going to lean heavily on Buster because, you know, from Boch to Buster to some of the other players in the clubhouse, nobody has a better perspective about what this clubhouse needs and what is going to create energy and enthusiasm and adjustments and accountability in this clubhouse like Buster does. Coaches matter too. And one of the things that I'm most excited and passionate about is hiring a top of the charts staff to lead this organization that I can lean on and give a lot of responsibility to, so I can be better equipped to sit down and have conversations with our players. And Ron Wotus is going to be our third base coach in 2020. I wanted to touch on a little bit why I'm really excited about coming into the San Francisco Giants organization, and very specifically the city of San Francisco. I got a text early this morning from a former teammate of mine who remembered back to like the mid-2000s and me saying I was really excited about going to San Francisco because I connect with the city, I connect with the food, I connect with the opportunity to walk the city, which is something that I share in common with Boch. And I can tell you that over the last couple of days, I've walked from the ballpark to Nob Hill to the Financial District and everywhere in between, stopped in cafes, had cups of coffee, you know, got great meals, and really was witness to what I believe to be one of the most diverse and accepting cities on the planet. And that probably excites me more than anything else about coming to San Francisco. I think Farhan will tell you that in Los Angeles, one of the things that I felt very strongly about was building people first and baseball players second. I maintain that to this day, and I don't think that I'm going to convince you that that's who I am in this press conference. But I think that over the course of my time in Los Angeles and over the course of my time in Philadelphia, people will say that I cared about people first. And I believe that I'll be able to demonstrate. I don't expect to gain your trust right now in this press conference, but know that over the course of time, I'm going to be able to do that. Very excited about foundation building. I know that the fan base in San Francisco is not interested in winning once and then going away. Building a foundation that can create a sustainable winning culture year in, year out, competing for National League West titles is something that I'm very excited about. I'm also excited about the little things that make this game fun. You know, panda costumes and baby giraffes and celebrating in this ballpark with all of the fans of San Francisco, and I'll leave it at that.
Hi, Gabe. Janie McCauley from Associated Press.
Janie.
How will you go maybe above and beyond to gain that trust of the fan base? You said it may not happen today or tomorrow, but are there things you can do, you know, proactively right now to start gaining the trust of everybody to make that process happen fast?
I think so. I think one of the things that comes to mind immediately is having these harder conversations with players that you might not have in the first couple of conversations if some of these issues weren't didn't exist. So by way of example, if I go out and I talk to Tyler Vitti, I talk to Buster, I talk to Brandon Crawford or Brandon Belt, normally that first conversation would entail a lot of baseball stuff. But maybe the way to handle this, and I actually feel pretty strongly about it, is to bring these issues up in the first conversation and talk about what we're going to stand for as Giants. Farhan mentioned it. Like, these are problems in Major League Baseball clubhouses. And Far mentioned that he hadn't done enough. I know he's speaking for himself personally, but I think I certainly haven't done enough, and the industry hasn't done enough. And I think it takes people willing to have those first conversations with players about what's important to us and what we're going to stand for in our clubhouse. And I think the way that I can make the biggest impact immediately is to talk about these things openly with our players and perhaps inspire them to start talking about them as well.
Hi, Gabe. Susan Slusser from the San Francisco Chronicle.
Hi, Susan.
You mentioned that you felt like you learned a lot in your first job with the Phillies. What specifically would you say that you learned there that you can bring here?
I think the thing that I learned most, and it was pretty abrupt, was in my first year as a Phillies manager in 2018, I thought a lot about every little strategic edge, every little strategic advantage, and sometimes at the expense of some of that confidence that we've talked about. And my biggest learn was sometimes the confidence, a confident player is a better baseball player, and that outweighs the strategic advantage you get of calling just the right pitch at the right time.
What do you feel are potentially the biggest challenges here with, obviously the roster will change, but with what you're working with now, you talk about building a foundation, what do you see kind of as the bigger challenges as you go into next season?
I think the biggest challenge is creating some structure and accountability. And again, I'm going to circle back because I really do believe this. Probably have to do a lot more listening than I do talking at first. So it's polling the players on our team and asking them about what type of structure they need.
That is the voice of new Giants manager Gabe Kapler. And we'll be talking a little more Gabe Kapler coming up about half an hour from now. Coming up next, though, we got Niner football to talk. And unfortunately, some not so great news to break to you. It's injury related. We'll get to that. Plus, DeForest Buckner joins us at 5 o'clock. Don't miss it. All right here on Damon Ratto and Kolsky with Joe Shasky in for Damon. All presented by Fremont Bank. Full service banking, no compromises.
Now back to Damon Ratto and Kolsky on 95.7 The Game.
We are back. Matt Kolsky, Ray Ratto. Today it's Joe Shasky in for Damon Bruce. Damon recovering from a sickness. Feel better, Damon. Rest up. And don't you dare come in here until you're totally healthy, because I don't want whatever you have.
I mean, the Niners lose one of the biggest games ever, and then the Giants hire a new manager. If Damon's out one more day, what's going to happen to the Warriors?
What else can happen to the Warriors at this point? But
they already have a worse record than the Knicks.
Yeah, that's true.
What do you want?
Part of that is because the Knicks got beat by a very good basketball team last night, but that's a whole other story. We have bad news. Per Adam Schefter, 49ers head coach Kyle Shanahan says tight end George Kittle will not play Sunday against Arizona.
This is devastating.
It's really bad. And at least we have not heard that about Emmanuel Sanders, correct? As far as we know, Emmanuel Sanders is still at least potentially possibly playing. Ooh, this is so bad my voice cracked. I think we know what Kittle represents. And it's not just that he's probably, even with Sanders, the best pass catcher on the team. Probably, even with Travis Kelce, the best tight end in football. There's something about the energy that he brings that you've mentioned it a couple times, Joe, and Ray probably disagrees with us, but I think that matters, especially in football.
You need guys out there laying dudes out that get everyone fired up. Like, there is a tangible effect on the sidelines and your teammates when you are the energy dude. He's headbutting people in the huddle. And then more for me is he sets the edge in the run game. Like, you look at these tackles, and I know Staley was out, McGlinchey was out. You missed him blocking, at least if it's a chip or getting in front of, Jadeveon Clowney specifically on Monday night.
Yeah, and to be clear, Staley and McGlinchey were in for this game. Rusty, because they'd been out,
yes.
But they were in for this game and looked like they needed George Kittle's help considerably.
Ray, do you not think that players feed off of other players?
What I question is the notion that George Kittle is the only person on that roster who can create that kind of buzz. If he is, then you've got an unmotivated team, and they shouldn't be 8-1.
That's interesting. I think, sadly,
you can't,
Quan Alexander was one of those guys, too.
Okay. So is Richard Sherman.
You're right. Yep.
So, in a quiet way, is Joe Staley. They have a number of people
who's also out this week.
A, can, B, should provide that service if George Kittle isn't there. Your edge blocking argument is far more persuasive to me than anything about this magical quality that only George Kittle seems to have, because he's not the only guy who has it. Other guys can either motivate them, their teammates, or their teammates can motivate themselves. That's not an excuse at any point. If you cannot motivate yourself at this point, then don't play.
It's not about motivating. What I'm saying is that whatever level you play at, whether it's kindergarten all the way through to the professional level, there are players that are just better than other people. And when you have them on your team and in your huddle, there is a bigger confidence for other people. And you don't have to do more. You only have to do just your job. You're not trying to replace somebody. And when you look to the left and you see Jerry Rice, you're like, we're going to get open on this play. And I know that the coverage is going to be different if Jerry's to the left of me. Same thing happens with George Kittle. When George Kittle's out there, you know, if you're Deebo Samuel or if you're Emmanuel Sanders, I'm going to get better looks. So I better run this route to perfection because the ball's probably going to come to me. There is a factor of being demoralized before the play even starts.
Yeah, I mean, you would hope professional players are not often demoralized before the play even starts. But based on what we just saw from a Niner offense without Emmanuel Sanders or George Kittle, that's not necessarily something I super want to see again.
Yeah, no. And it's devastating for this week, but I get the long play. Like, if you're trying to get him ready for Green Bay, New Orleans, Baltimore, like that stretch, I understand holding them out. I'm devastated because I feel like this injury is way bigger than they continue to let on. This has happened time and time again. Oh, you know, Witherspoon will be back in a couple of weeks. And well, he's got more injuries, right? You don't think that this is a big injury?
I don't know if it is or not. I mean, you would think that after losing last week, the temptation to load manage him would have diminished. Well, it seems clear to me now that he can't play, particularly if Kyle Shanahan is telling Adam Schefter on Wednesday that he's not playing. That means it's not really been considered as an option. So you may be right, but I'm not a doctor and I haven't examined him, and I think he prefers it that way. I think it's not only just a legitimate injury, but it could be a lingering one.
That's bad.
Take the 11.5.
Now, to be clear, because a couple of texters have asked about this, Shanahan did not say at his press conference that Kittle was not playing on Sunday. That is an Adam Schefter report where Adam Schefter said Kyle Shanahan, quote, said. Now, I don't know if he's saying Kyle Shanahan talked directly to him. Albie, did you see the actual tweet? Okay, we're looking into that. But for now, what Shanahan did say at his press conference is Joe Staley and DJ Jones are definitely going to be out on Sunday, which hurts on both ends, especially you've already lost Ronald Blair, that middle of the defensive line. And by the way, we'll be talking to the biggest piece of the middle of that defensive line. DeForest Buckner joins the show just a little over 5 minutes from now. But this rotation, that part of what made the line so dominant was its depth. That depth is slowly being wiped away with unfortunate injuries.
DJ Jones is just a better football player than Solomon Thomas, if we're talking about D tackles. Somebody I want next to DeForest Buckner, I want DJ Jones. I mean, he only played like 8 snaps, and he was in the backfield 3 or 4 times of those 8 snaps. I mean, he's a really, really good player. He's not a world beater, but he's definitely one of their top 4 linemen. I think that's a big loss for them. And then Joe Staley, I kept saying this to everybody. I love Joe Staley, but he's an older guy. And when you break your leg, like we saw with Paul George, he was in the prime of his career.
No, it's his finger, though.
I know, but I'm talking about his leg. He didn't look the same.
Okay.
Whether it's the finger injury or not.
Wait, like, so are you saying you're not so upset that Joe Staley's going to miss this?
Of course I'm upset. You're a better team when you have Joe Staley, whether he's suited up, on the sideline playing. Like, you're better with him there.
But I actually think this is a question. And before we go too far,
it's not a bit.
When you watch Joe Staley, granted, that's Jadeveon Clowney.
Yeah.
And
it was a bad matchup.
Justin School wasn't perfect when he was in there. But are you sure the guy we just watched on Monday night is a better option than Justin School? Because School was pretty darn good.
His body of work is significantly better at Staley, obviously, because of his career.
Of course.
But all I'm saying is that everyone expected, like, it's a video game. He's out 4 weeks. He comes back. He's back to 99 overall.
Not just everyone out here. Clearly the team did, because School was not active for that Monday night game. There was no safety net for Joe Staley.
And that's why, like, Ray, you followed these teams forever. When a lineman his age gets hurt and then gets hurt again so quickly, isn't there cause for concern?
Only if you want there to be. I mean, these are two unrelated injuries.
Okay.
And what I would suggest to you is that, and we've heard it from people all week, is that Jadeveon Clowney's in a contract year. He was playing on Monday night. So whatever energy he had to muster, he was going to muster it. And when he is fully energized, he is as good a defensive player as there is in the league.
Did someone on his team motivate him, you think, that night? That was a joke, because you don't believe in motivation.
I know, but it's way creepy. No, I think sometimes you just get beat by a better guy.
I agree.
And the other night, Jadeveon Clowney was significantly better than anybody on that offensive line.
So do you guys think School is better right now than Joe Staley?
I don't.
I don't either.
Probably not. Probably not.
Okay, well, there you go.
I'll say this. I am not so sure about that I would have Justin School inactive on Sundays.
Well,
for the sake of argument, Ray, before you say whatever you're going to say, if on Sunday, I believe you said the words yesterday on the show, Chandler Jones is not Jadeveon Clowney. If on Sunday, Chandler Jones, I know Staley's not playing, but for the sake of argument, if Chandler Jones made Staley look the same way Clowney did, then would you be worried about Joe Staley?
I would be more concerned to the extent that I show concern.
Okay.
But I think if Chandler Jones was manhandling Joe Staley, I see no reason why he wouldn't do the same to School.
Exactly.
Because I still don't believe that School is as good as Staley is.
The question is this.
This will not be true anymore, but I don't know that point's been reached.
First of all, we're all on the same page. I don't think that point has been reached either. All I'm trying to inquire is how are we going to know when that point's been reached if we're not at least entertaining the possibility of reaching it?
Thirsty.
That's a good answer. Here's a clarification from Matt Barrows on the Kittle issue. Barrows says, Shanahan told the Cardinals media, we won't have Kittle in Sunday's game against the Cardinals. That's different than what he said on Tuesday, that the team wouldn't rule out Kittle until the last possible opportunity. So apparently, your boy Kyle Shanahan is giving nuggets to the Arizona media that he's not giving to us.
I honestly felt like they were preparing last week like Kittle was going to play. And I thought that Kyle Shanahan's game plan, the scheme, like I saw no wrinkles. Just me watching the game, I expect a couple of wrinkles every quarter from Kyle Shanahan. Plays and they go, ooh, like that's something he's been thinking about.
Can you give me an example of a wrinkle?
Well, like a double screen, for example. He's done that a lot this year with the misdirection. Maybe a jet sweep where you see some sort of action based off of a smaller play. They'll run a sweep in one direction. Then they run that exact same play, but they fake it and throw back to the opposite side. He's really big on stretching defenses. I just didn't see that this week, and it felt like, to me, Shanahan thought he had Kittle in the bag, and then, you know, he found out Kittle couldn't play, and they were just kind of stuck with a limited playbook. And maybe I'm wrong.
Sure doesn't sound like the Kyle Shanahan we've come to know.
And that's why I think he was geared up that Kittle was going to play. That go back and watch that game. His play calling left a lot to be desired, and I haven't said that a lot this year.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.